Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
On the morning of August 2, 2008, 69-year-old William Bill Walker was at his workshop near Moses Lake, Washington, when an explosive suddenly went off, killing him instantly. Hours later, just after midnight on August 3rd, another blast ripped through the home of 53-year-old Javier Adame just miles away, also killing him instantly. Investigators were stunned by the two explosions happening so close in proximity and in time. As they pieced together the scenes, they realized that both deaths were caused by carefully concealed pipe bombs manufactured by the same person. Despite this connection, investigators couldn't find a link between the victims or a clear reason why anyone would want them dead. It's been over 16 years since Bill and Javier were murdered, and investigators are still searching for the person or people responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve the case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, so Bill Walker and Javier Adame, these are our victims that we're going to be covering tonight. This case has also been referred to as the Moses Lake bombings. And as you can probably tell, this is a little different than some of the cases I normally cover here. And that's intentional. I want to change it up. I want to keep it interesting as far as the types of cases that we're covering. And I do want to get a little feedback from you guys because I've talked to the team and I would also like to consider covering major robberies or heists. I think those cases with the mystery behind them would be interesting as well. But let me know your thoughts in the comments down below. Weigh in. Let me know what you think. You can be honest, but we're still going to predominantly cover murders and missing people because those stories need to be told. But every once in a while, I'd like to mix it up and throw you guys off by changing it up a little bit. I know we cover some more high-profile cases as well. Not only is that for the algorithm, but again, it's just based on recommendations from you guys. So let me know what you think, and we'll go from there. But as far as this case, we're going to go over the facts and circumstances. I have three different theories, three different scenarios to lay out for you. Two of them, I think, you'll probably come to on your own throughout this episode. But I think the final one may surprise some of you, and it may even piss some of you off. I don't think it will, but we'll get there eventually. So let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. William Walker, known to many as Wild Bill, was born on July 19, 1939, to parents Herbert and Nova. He grew up in California, but later in life he moved to Ohio, where he owned and operated two fishing stores. In the 1970s, Bill and his wife Dorothy relocated to Washington State, settling in a house on 4th Street Northeast, about 4 miles outside of Moses Lake. Bill worked as an electrician, and in his free time, he could often be found hunting, fishing, or working on projects in his shop just behind the family home. In an interview with the Columbia Basin Herald, Dorothy described Bill as a kind-hearted man who loved working on projects with his children and grandchildren. He was always helping others, offering to pay for gas or fix things in his shop. By all accounts, Bill was loved by everyone who knew him. He was the last person that anyone would expect to be murdered. But, as you already know from the teaser, that's exactly what happened. According to Bill's granddaughter, Victoria, who spoke to the podcast Murder in My Family, at around 8 a.m. on Saturday, August 2nd, 2008, Dorothy and a handful of family members left to visit relatives out of town while Bill stayed behind. A few hours into the trip, Dorothy tried calling Bill, but he didn't pick up. She kept trying, growing increasingly worried when he still didn't pick up, and eventually she called her grandson Andy, who lived nearby, and asked him to go check on Bill. Andy agreed, and knowing that his grandpa was often in the shop, he made sure to look there as well. But as soon as he opened the door, he saw shop equipment scattered everywhere. After moving some of the equipment aside, he found Bill lying face down on the ground. He had, quote, experienced severe trauma and had, quote, received wounds to his neck and chest. There was also this hole in the shop wall as if some type of explosion had gone off. And as you can see from the photo, it's not this massive gaping hole in the wall like a person could walk through it, but it was big enough to say, okay, that wasn't there before, and you could probably tell that it was relatively new. Just before 3 p.m., Andy called the Grant County Sheriff's Office, and they responded to the scene along with EMS. When they arrived, they pronounced 69-year-old Bill Walker dead at the scene. Based on what they saw in the shop, police and EMS believed Bill's death had been caused by an accidental explosion, possibly from a marine battery charger or something else amongst the debris. The police didn't suspect anything nefarious, so at first, no real investigation took place, aside from efforts to determine when Bill died. According to the Oregonian, the police canvassed the area and spoke to a couple who had been sleeping in an RV parked in the Walker's driveway. They said between 9 and 10 a.m. that morning, they heard an explosion, but hadn't gone out to check it out. The police also spoke to a couple walking their dog at the same time that morning. They reported hearing a muffled blast and seeing a puff of smoke drift from the shop. However, they also chose not to investigate. With everything the police knew so far, they continued to believe that Bill's death was a tragic accident. As a result, they did not tape off Bill's shop as a crime scene, and they released the area to the family that same day. The family, also believing this was an accident, began cleaning up the shop to spare Dorothy from seeing anything traumatic. Now, I want to pause here for a second and say that it's interesting that the Grant County Sheriff's Office didn't think much of this explosion at Bill's house. And I say this because less than 2 weeks earlier, there had been an explosion in the Lakeview area roughly 25 miles away from Bill's house, also in Grant County. Now, this incident took place on July 23, 2008, when a 1985 Dodge Ram pickup truck parked in a field across from a home on Othello Place and exploded, completely destroying the vehicle. When arson investigators arrived, they found remnants of a pipe bomb. They began investigating and were still looking into that explosion when Bill died in the shop. But despite these two explosions happening in the same county within a two-week period, police didn't start suspecting anything nefarious at Bill's place until about 10 hours later, when yet another explosion was reported in Grant County, just 6 miles away from Bill's place. At 12:30 a.m. on what was now Sunday, August 3rd, a woman named Heather called the police and reported that an explosion had just gone off, killing her boyfriend in their Stratford Road Northeast home just outside the Moses Lake city limits. According to the Spokesman Review, when police arrived, they found 53-year-old Javier Martinez Adame dead on the kitchen floor. He had severe wounds to his chest and stomach, and deputies noticed a strong sulfur smell in and around the home. It was immediately clear that an explosion had occurred, just as Heather had reported. Heather told police that earlier that weekend, she had found a police scanner in a paper grocery bag in their driveway. She didn't recognize it, so she moved it to the porch. Then just after midnight on August 3rd, Javier brought the scanner into the kitchen and plugged it in. Heather recalled that Javier muttered an expletive just before the scanner exploded, killing him instantly. Now, this is just the top of the story. We're going to be looking into the backgrounds of both Bill and Javier, and there are some things that are going to come up that were unexpected. We're going to take our first break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back from break, and before we continue, I just want to point out that, as a side note, the police told the Columbia Basin Herald that finding pipe bombs wasn't unusual. Just 3 months earlier, a pipe bomb had been found along an irrigation canal bank in the Lakeview area, though it hadn't exploded. And the police at that time said, quote, "We find them every now and then. It's been quite a while since we had one." So this just goes to show you, I don't know how pipe bombs would be a common thing anywhere. I think If there's one and then there's another, it's a problem. But it seems like this was something that maybe at the time, because of the area and because of the accessibility of some of the items to make a pipe bomb, they weren't overly concerned. And I don't like to Monday morning quarterback. I wasn't there. This quote could be taken out of context, but I wanted to put it in there because at minimum, it says that, hey, listen, this isn't the first time we've seen something like this. We're aware of it. I know if it had happened in my city where I worked, if we had a pipe bomb, it would be all hands on deck. That wasn't a common occurrence. So you take this quote however you want. I wanted to throw it in there for you and you can interpret it any way you like. Now, let's get back to Javier's story because upon examining the scanner, police realized that a pipe bomb had been hidden inside. And unlike the explosion that had taken place at Bill's shop, police did not initially believe the explosion at Javier's house was accidental. They immediately suspected that he had been murdered and the choice of weapon was a pipe bomb. Javier's home was immediately declared a crime scene and bomb-sniffing dogs were brought in to search the house. After it was deemed safe, Heather was interviewed further to help police learn more about Javier. Heather explained that she and Javier lived together in the home. He was a father and grandfather who loved helping people and enjoyed working on wood projects and cars. At the time of his death, Javier was unemployed, having worked odd jobs most of his life after a car accident that left him unable to work full time. While Heather was being interviewed, the police were searching the house inside and out. And the Spokesman Review reported that outside the house, police found materials commonly used to make pipe bombs. This included pipes, end caps, nails, electrical wires, and timing devices. The only things missing were fuses and the accelerant, like gunpowder. Based on these findings, police believed that Javier had experience with explosives, and they speculated that he may have heard the detonator activate when he plugged in the scanner, which would explain why he muttered some type of swear word right before the device exploded. Now, I do want to say here, this is one interpretation of what these materials being found could mean. It may mean he just coincidentally had experience with pipe bombs. I would have gone maybe another route, and Haley had made some notes in this script that would suggest that I wasn't the only one who thought that when I read this, but there is another angle to this that some of you are probably picking up on what I'm throwing down. And I'm going to save this whole theory that I want to dive into until the perspective, but it does pose some major questions. One of the biggest ones being, is Heather telling the truth to police or is she covering something up? So after surveying the scene at Javier's, the police were now wondering if the explosion at Bill's house was connected. As I mentioned earlier, they initially believed Bill's death was a tragic accident. But now, with two fatal explosions occurring within less than 12 hours, it seemed like Bill's death needed a closer look. Bill's granddaughter Victoria, who I told you earlier had spoke to the Murder in My Family podcast, also told them that police returned to Bill's shop and officially declared it a crime scene. However, by this point, people had already been in and out of the garage, cleaning up so Dorothy wouldn't have to see the aftermath. Unfortunately, this meant that potential evidence had been disturbed or even removed. Even with that being the case, the police examined what was left, and during their search, they noticed that a marine battery charger, which was found amongst the debris, could have been potentially concealing a pipe bomb. And based on this finding, it was now believed that Bill could have been murdered just like Javier. But here's where things get even stranger. When police spoke with Bill's family about the battery charger, they learned that it belonged to Bill. He had loaned it out to a family member for some time prior to the explosion, but it was his. Now, the family wasn't sure how or when Bill got the battery charger back. They didn't even know if it had been returned to him before the explosion or if someone might have placed it outside the shop that morning. All they knew was that he had loaned it out and it was back by the time of the explosion. But based on what Heather said about the police scanner just showing up at their house, the police suspected that Bill might have found the battery charger somewhere on his property, brought it into the shop, plugged it in, and that's when it exploded. According to KHQ, police now believe that Javier and Bill's murders might be connected and possibly linked to the Dodge Ram pipe bomb in Lakeview. So with multiple explosions to investigate, the FBI was brought in to assist. The FBI was ultimately able to determine that the pipe bombs used in Bill and Javier's deaths were made by the same person or group. However, the bomb in Lakeview was a different type of explosive. Just a quick note here, the police didn't specifically say that the Dodge pipe bomb wasn't related to the murders. However, after this, this incident wasn't really brought up again with the murders. It wasn't covered by the media. But just because it wasn't covered by the media, it doesn't mean that behind the scenes, investigators still didn't believe there was a connection and was actively working that. Again, just because it's not reported on, it doesn't mean that there's not something going on. So I just wanted to point that out. We couldn't find a lot of mention of the Dodge pipe bomb after all this, you know, when the FBI came out and said, hey, it's a different explosive. But there's a lot of explanations for that. One could be that the same bomber committed all three acts, and yet they were trying different things. And so the device that was used was different. That's the simple explanation. So I don't want to discount it completely. And I do think it could be connected. And that's going to come into play in one of my theories at the end of this episode. So in regards to these explosives, let's talk a little bit about them, because a ATF senior explosive officer who worked on the case later told King 5 that the person who made the pipe bombs used in Bill and Javier's murders was, quote, very skilled. The officer said, quote, real malice and forethought occurred here. Somebody built a bomb, disguised a bomb, and then designed it in such a way that it would be operated by the victim. The officer didn't share what the bombs were made of. However, he mentioned that, quote, most pipe bombs we see are filled with explosive powder, fireworks powder, all these things are readily available. They can be misused. While the FBI was examining evidence from the explosions, the police started looking into Bill and Javier to see if there might be a connection. Maybe they had a common enemy, or maybe they were involved in something similar. Unfortunately, this didn't really go anywhere. The police were never able to find any link between Bill and Javier. The two men didn't know each other, and they ran in completely different circles. In fact, when police looked into Bill's background, they didn't find any red flags. He was well-loved by everyone who knew him, he had never been arrested, and he wasn't involved in anything suspicious. However, when it came to Javier, police had some concerns, and we're going to talk about it right after the break. Okay, so we're back from break, and let's talk a little bit more about Javier, because according to the Oregonian, when officers searched Javier's home, they found more than 3 grams of methamphetamine and syringes. And after running a background check, they learned that Javier had prior convictions from the late 1990s for cocaine possession and drug paraphernalia. Now, based on this new evidence and information, police suspected that Javier might be involved in drug dealing, and they wondered if this had anything to do with why someone targeted him with a pipe bomb. And with this new angle in mind, police revisited Bill's background looking for any possible drug connections. And as I mentioned earlier, they found no direct ties to drugs. However, they did discover that back in 2004, Bill's grandson, Andy, the same one who had found him in the shop, had been arrested when police found 186 marijuana plants in a travel trailer that he was using. Andy later told the Oregonian that the police investigating Bill's murder asked him right out, "Did you owe anybody money in the drug world?" And he said no. He had put his troubled years behind him after his arrest, but the police continued pressing Andy for some time before eventually moving on. And part of the reason they made this course correction is because they turned their focus to one of Bill's neighbors whose home had been raided by the DEA 5 months earlier in a cocaine investigation. Law enforcement sources speculated that some type of criminal drug organization, maybe even the cartel, could have intended to leave the battery charger at the neighbor's house, but mistakenly placed it at Bill's. Now, as far as that's concerned, that is tough for me to see. What are the chances that Bill would have loaned out his battery charger to someone and ironically this criminal organization slash cartel would happen to leave a battery charger at his property? It's highly unlikely. And I failed to mention it earlier, but I'll mention it here because we're talking about the battery charger again. I was trying to find who the battery charger was loaned out to. Obviously, that's critical information. I'm assuming it was a friend or family member. I'm hoping that that person was identified by someone, even if they didn't know how long this individual had the battery charger. And I'm really hoping that if they identified this person, they went and interviewed them, because clearly, at minimum, they would be a person of interest, if not a suspect. So it's not that I'm leaving it out intentionally. This battery charger, who it was loaned out to, it's a mystery for me at this point. If something is brought up in the comments or I find some additional information, I'll absolutely post it on social media. But as of right now, I do not know who Bill loaned the battery charger to. And as far as the connection here with it being a criminal organization who left it on his property, that's hard for me to believe. But I will say that the theory of mistaken identity is still very much possible. Yes, if these people next door had pissed off some bad people, they could have been the target, and maybe Bill was just a casualty here where he was in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong neighborhood. But that is going to be one of my theories, and we'll talk more about that at the end. And back to these neighbors real quick. It's unclear if anything was found on their property that was of value. If there was, it was never released to the public. What we do know is that the police eventually concluded that Bill was likely the victim of mistaken identity, and whoever left the bomb that day hadn't meant to murder Bill. As for who the bomb was intended for, the police still aren't sure. As the investigation into the murders of Bill and Javier continued, reporting slowed down. Then on December 4th, Javier's girlfriend, 30-year-old Heather, was found dead in the same home where Javier had been killed. She was found lying on the floor next to a bed with no obvious signs of trauma. The Tri-City Herald reported that the power to the home had been turned off the day before, and there didn't appear to be any active heat source. Although police didn't believe Heather's death was related to Javier's, they still labeled her death suspicious and asked the Washington State Patrol Crime Lab to collect evidence. An autopsy was performed on Heather that day, and with no signs of trauma or lethal injuries, there was no obvious cause of death, so toxicology tests were ordered, and later those results revealed that she had died of natural causes. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail about Heather's death. I do have more information. What I will say is this. Heather struggled with some addiction, and from what I can gather here, she died of diabetes. So doesn't appear to be anything suspicious about her death other than the fact that she died in the same home. That's at least what I can gather from what can be found and is available publicly. Following Heather's death, there was very little reporting on Bill and Javier's murders, and by 2014, the lead investigator confirmed to the media that the cases had gone cold. There have been few major updates since then, with the most recent coming in February of 2023, more than 14 years after Bill and Javier were killed. At that time, the Grant County Sheriff's Office told King 5 that they still haven't found a connection between Bill and Javier's cases, but they continue to believe that Bill's murder was a case of mistaken identity. Javier's daughter Raquel also spoke to King 5, and she said she couldn't talk about her father's murder without becoming emotional. She asked, quote, "How could this have happened to two different men way across town, and what was the reason behind it?" Raquel added, quote, "Somebody out there knows something. I beg you, please say something if you know something. They deserve justice." Okay, let's dive into this perspective and elaborate on some of the things I said throughout the episode. I'm sure your head's spinning right now. You got all these scenarios running through your mind. I'm going to break them down to the three that I think are the most prominent. First one being, and this is a little bit outside the box, we didn't really discuss it in the episode, but I think it's plausible. What if this is a serial killer that just happened to use pipe bombs? Yes, we have Bill's incident. Yes, we have Javier's incident. And we have this Dodge pickup, right? My question would be, how many more? And they may not all be from that area. It could be throughout the country. We don't know who this person is. Javier and Bill could have been just random targets for this person to try out these new explosive devices that he or she was experimenting with. Now, there's no evidence to direct us in that way. And from what law enforcement has shared with us, there's been no indication of that. But they also haven't implicated or suggested a specific person from the area was involved. And to me, that really opens up the field of suspects. It could be someone from that community. It could be someone who is just passing through. I think both scenarios, based on what we know, are equally plausible. And what about this truck, this Dodge pickup truck where this explosive device went off? It could mean a couple things, but at minimum, who did this truck belong to? Was it so badly damaged that there was no way to find out the registration behind the vehicle, whether that was through a license plate or a VIN number? Did law enforcement ever identify the owner of this vehicle? That is information that I would like to have. And it's possible that this Dodge pickup truck belonged to an owner who lived right there, and that's fine. I would still want to know who that person is and see if they had any connection to Bill or Javier, or maybe both. And if it doesn't belong to anyone in that area, who does it belong to, and why was the vehicle parked there? That would be the question. Now, the second scenario we're going to talk about is the one that I've been alluding to throughout this episode, and the one that law enforcement has subtly inferred is the most probable scenario in their minds and their professional opinions based on their investigation. And that's the idea that Javier was the intended target and Bill was killed due to mistaken identity. So you could be looking at a situation where if Javier was involved with some bad people, they were going to kill him with the pipe bomb. They didn't do enough research and they plant the bomb at the wrong location. And unfortunately, Bill was collateral damage. And maybe even before the bomb went off, who knows, they realize that they got the wrong location. And that's when they make a second bomb and put it in the driveway of Javier's home. So 12 hours later, when Javier finally gets to it, plugs it in, that's when they accomplish whatever mission they had to take out this quote unquote competitor or target or someone who maybe owed them money. We don't know. I will say in Javier's defense, you would think if that were the case, there would be a lot more to this investigation. They would learn that Javier was involved in some type of criminal activity or enterprise. And not that I'm minimizing his charges that he had, but we're talking cocaine possession and drug paraphernalia. There's a lot of people who are good people but made bad decisions who have those type of charges on their record. I would have liked to see some type of charge of distribution on there or associates of his that were involved in distribution through an investigation where I could say, yeah, even though he hasn't been charged, he's in those circles. He's around those people. It's very possible that he's dealing in that type of business. Maybe that is true. If it is, they haven't said it to us. And so I would think at this point, with all these years and the case going quote unquote cold, according to law enforcement, if that were the case, maybe they would come out with more information at this time saying, hey, Javier was involved in some bad stuff. They went after him. They accidentally killed Bill. And when they realized it, they took another shot at it and they finally got him. But as of right now, they haven't. So we're kind of left wondering, is this really what happened? Or could it be even a more simpler explanation, which is the third theory that I'm going to talk about right now? So before I get into this final theory, I want to qualify here by saying, I mean no disrespect to Javier, his family, or his friends with what I'm about to talk about. Part of being an investigator is asking difficult questions and exploring all theories, even when they potentially involve one of the victims. And something that may have crossed many of your minds as I was going throughout this episode was the fact that many components needed to make a pipe bomb were found on Javier's property. And one thing that we know is that there have been cases where the offenders have actually killed themselves with their own contraptions. So finding all those items on his property and not really seeing a need for them other than to make the bombs, that's concerning. And it does make me wonder if this answer to this whole mystery, both with Bill and Javier, is much more simple. Could Javier be the bomber? Could he have been involved with the Dodge pickup truck pipe bomb? And for reasons unknown to us, was he the one who planted the bomb at Bill's property earlier that day? Now, I know law enforcement has said there is no connection between Bill and Javier, which makes that scenario unlikely. But if there was a connection, or maybe Bill was just randomly picked by Javier because Javier had some bigger plans, maybe later in that day, when he was working on additional devices, he made a mistake and killed himself. So that brings into question Heather. If this is all true, what I'm saying, why would she tell this elaborate story? Well, if she knew what Javier was doing, she's criminally liable as well. So by making up this story and basically putting the bomb outside the property and painting Javier as a victim, she not only clears herself, but she also clears Javier, who's now no longer with them. And it is interesting to me that after Javier's death, there's no more occurrences in the area. As I mentioned earlier in the episode, you had 3 bombings in a very short period of time. And then after these explosions and after Javier's no longer with us, the bombs stop. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there could be another explanation for that. If Javier's not involved and this person who is responsible was just passing through, maybe after law enforcement came in and started turning up the heat, they moved on to another area. Or if they're from the neighborhood, they stopped doing what they were doing because they knew it was only time before they got caught. So again, I'm not saying that this is what happened or that Javier's the guy, but with the bombing material being found on his property, and also just, again, it could be a coincidence. I mentioned the Dodge pickup truck that exploded. When you look at the photos of Javier's residence, there's also a Dodge pickup truck in the driveway, a red one. Did he happen to like Dodges? I don't know. That's why it's important to know who that Dodge pickup truck belonged to. Again, it could be just a coincidence. And if I was working the case, these are the things that I would be finding out. So again, just to reiterate, if someone from Javier's family is watching this, I want to make it abundantly clear. I'm posing the question. I'm not making accusations. As far as I'm concerned, as I sit here right now, Javier is not guilty of anything. And if there was bombing material found on Bill's property, I'd be saying the same thing. So where does that leave us? Unfortunately, not with much. I wish I had better news. This is going to take a confession, or based on the forensic processing of these crime scenes and the bombs themselves, something to come forward from another case where a similar device was created and there was someone identified and held responsible for that crime, where they can say, okay, we have John Doe over here. He was doing these pipe bombs in a state over. It's the exact same MO, the exact same apparatus. Maybe we can tie him to it. Now, he may not confess to it, but maybe they can show that this person was in this area at the time when the bombs occurred. Or if you got really lucky, the person who's now behind bars would confess to it, but that's not likely. It also comes back to what Raquel said. There's got to be someone out there who knows something. And I'm not just talking about the killer. I'm talking about their friends, family, or maybe someone from the community who saw something or heard something, didn't think it was valuable at the time, but unbeknownst to them, it could have been the final piece of the puzzle. You don't know what law enforcement has, and maybe they have 2 pieces and they're just looking for that connecting factor, and you may have it. So just to recap, between 9 and 10 a.m. on August 2nd, 2008, Bill Walker was killed by a pipe bomb concealed in a marine battery charger at his home on 4th Street Northeast, about 4 miles east of Moses Lake in Washington. Then, at around 12:30 a.m. on August 3rd, Javier Adame was killed by a similar pipe bomb hidden in a police scanner left outside his home on Stratford Road Northeast, just outside the Moses Lake city limits. Investigators determined that the pipe bombs used to kill both men were manufactured by the same unknown individual or group. Anyone with information about the murders of Bill Walker and Javier Adame is urged to contact the Grant County Sheriff's Office at 509-754-2018, and it's important to note a reward is available for information leading to an arrest. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Bill and Javier. This is a difficult position to be in. You have more questions than you have answers, and you have lead investigators responsible for finding your loved one's killer saying the case has gone cold. But I don't want you to lose hope, because what we know is that 16 years is a long time. It's too long for you to have to wait for answers, but cases have been solved that are older. So be patient, be determined, and keep the hope, because we're here fighting with you. There's many people rooting for you, and I'm hoping that you get the answers you deserve sooner than later. And if that day comes, nothing will please me more than sitting right here and updating all of you, letting you know that this person has been caught and they're finally where they belong. Now, on a positive note, because we don't get a lot of that around here, if you're listening or watching this episode, Thanksgiving is this week. And one thing I will say about these cases, we talk about a lot of victims and their family members, and hearing about them and what they're going through and what they have to endure every day, it really makes me appreciative for what I have, because I know that all of them would just wish for one more day with their loved one. So that is some silver lining that we can take from this, to be appreciative of what we do have. And I can tell you that I'm extremely grateful for each and every one of you who comes here every week and listens or watches these episodes to not only support me, but to support the victims and their families. So I'm extremely grateful, and I wouldn't be here without you guys. So that's going to do it from me. Everyone stay safe out there. Have a good Thanksgiving, and I'll see you soon.